Kelsier stuffed another one of the little red frosted cakes into his mouth, chewing with satisfaction. The fat thief and his scrawny attendant passed through the waiting room, entering the entryway beyond. The obligator who had interviewed the two thieves remained in his office, apparently awaiting his next appointment.
Well, what do you think?
They're quite good. The ministry has always had excellent taste. It makes sense that they would provide superior snacks.
About the girl, Kel.
Kelsier smiled as he piled four of the cakes in his hand, then nodded toward the doorway. The Canton waiting room was growing too busy for the discussion of delicate matters. On the way out, he paused and told the obligator secretary in the corner that they needed to reschedule. Then the two crossed through the entry chamber, passing the overweight crew leader, who stood speaking with a scribe. Kelsier stepped out onto the street, pulled his hood up against the still falling ash, then led the way across the street. He paused beside an alleyway, standing where he and Doxson could watch the Canton building's doors.
How did you find out about her?
Your brother. Cameron tried to swindle Mars a few months ago, and he brought the girl with him then, too. Actually, Cameron's little good luck charm is becoming moderately famous in the right circles. I'm still not sure if he knows what she is or not. You know how superstitious thieves can get.
How'd you know she'd be here today?
A few bribes in the right places. I've been keeping an eye on the girl ever since Marsh pointed her out to me. I wanted to give you an opportunity to see her work for yourself.
Across the street, the Canton building's door finally opened, and Cameron made his way down the steps, surrounded by a group of servants. The small, short-haired girl was with him. The sight of her made Kelsier frown. She had a nervous anxiety to her step, and she jumped slightly whenever someone made a quick move. The right side of her face was still slightly discolored from a partially healed bruise. Kelsier eyed the self-important Cameron.
I'll have to come up with something particularly suitable to do to that man.
Poor thing.
She'll be free of him soon enough. It's a wonder no one has discovered her before this.
Your brother was right, though.
She's at least a misting, and if Marsh says she's more, I'm inclined to believe him. I'm a bit surprised to see her using allomancy on a member of the ministry, especially inside a Canton building. I guess that she doesn't know she's even using her abilities.
Is that possible?
Trace minerals on the water can be burned, if just for a tiny bit of power. That's one of the reasons the Lord Ruler built his city here. Lots of metals in the ground. I'd say that...
Kelsier frowned slightly. Something was wrong. He glanced toward Cameron and his crew. They were still visible in the near distance, crossing the street and heading south. A figure appeared in the Canton building's doorway. Lean, with a confident air, he bore the tattoos of a high prelate of the Canton of Finance around his eyes. Probably the very man Cameron had met with shortly before. The obligator stepped out of the building, and a second man exited behind him. Beside Kelsier, Doxson suddenly tensed. The second man was tall, with a strong build. As he turned, Kelsier was able to see that a thick metal spike had been pounded tip first through each of the man's eyes. With shafts as wide as an eye socket, the nail-like spikes were long enough that their sharp points jutted out about an inch from the back of the man's clean-shaven skull. The flat spike ends shone like two silvery discs, sticking out of the sockets in the front where the eyes should have been. A steel inquisitor.
What's that doing here?
Stay calm.
Kelsier tried to force himself to do the same. The Inquisitor looked toward them, spiked eyes regarding Kelsier, before turning in the direction that Cameron and the girl had gone. Like all Inquisitors, he wore intricate eye tattoos, mostly black, with one stark red line that marked him as a high-ranking member of the Canton of Inquisition.
He's not here for us. I'm not burning anything. He'll think that we're just ordinary noblemen.
The girl.
You say Cameron's been running this scam on the ministry for a while? Well, the girl must have been detected by one of the obligators. They're trained to recognize when an allomancer tampers with their emotions.
Doxson frowned thoughtfully. Across the street, the Inquisitor conferred with the other obligator. Then the two of them turned to walk in the direction that Cameron had gone. There was no urgency to their pace.
They must have sent a tail to follow them.
This is the ministry. There'll be two tails at least.
Cameron will lead them directly back to his safe house. Dozens of men will die. They're not all the most admirable people, but...
They fight the final empire in their own way. Besides, I'm not about to let a possible mistborn slip away from us. I want to talk to that girl. Can you deal with those tails?
I said I'd become boring, Kel, not sloppy. I can handle a couple of ministry flunkies.
Good.
Kelsier reached into his cloak pocket and pulled out a small vial. A collection of metal flakes floated in an alcohol solution within. Iron, steel, tin, pewter, copper, bronze, zinc, and brass. The 8 basic alimentic metals. Kelsier pulled off the stopper and downed the contents. He pocketed the now empty vial, wiping his mouth.
I'll handle that Inquisitor.
You're going to try and take him?
Too dangerous. I'll just divert him. Now get going. We don't want those tails finding the safe house.
Meet back at the 15th crossroad.
Dachshund took off down the alley and disappeared around a corner. Kelsier gave his friend a count of 10 before reaching within himself and burning his metals. His body became awash with strength, clarity, and power. Kelsier smiled. Then, burning zinc, he reached out and yanked firmly on the Inquisitor's emotions. The creature froze in place, then spun, looking back toward the Canton building.
Let's have a chase now, you and I.
We arrived in Terrace earlier this week, and I have to say, I find the countryside beautiful. The great mountains to the north, with their bald snow caps and forested mantles, stand like watchful gods over this land of green fertility. My own lands to the south are mostly flat. I think that they might look less dreary if there were a few mountains to vary the terrain. The people here are mostly herdsmen, though timber harvesters and farmers are not uncommon. It is a pastoral land, certainly. It seems odd that a place so remarkably agrarian could have produced the prophecies and theologies upon which the entire world now relies.
Kamen counted his coins, dropping the golden boxings one by one into the small chest on his table. He still looked a bit stunned, as well he should have been. 3,000 boxings was a fabulous amount of money, far more than Kamen would earn in even a very good year. His closest cronies sat at the table with him, ale flowing freely. Vin sat in her corner, trying to understand her feelings of dread. 3,000 boxings. The ministry should never have let such a sum go so quickly. Prelin Ariev had seemed too cunning to be fooled with ease. Vin couldn't decide if Kamen was being foolish or clever by making such a display of wealth. Underworld crews worked under a strict agreement. Everyone received a cut of earnings in proportion to their status in the group. While it was sometimes tempting to kill the crew leader and take his money for yourself, a successful leader created more wealth for everyone. Kill him prematurely and you would cut off future earnings, not to mention earn the wrath of the other crew members. Still, 3,000 boxings. That would be enough to tempt even the most logical thief. It was all wrong.
I have to get out of here. Get away from Kamen and the lair in case something happens.
And yet, leave? By herself? She'd never been alone before. She'd always had Rhin. He'd been the one to lead her from city to city, joining different thieving crews. She loved solitude. But the thought of being by herself out in the city horrified her. That was why she'd never run away from Rhin. That was why she'd stayed with Kamen. She couldn't go, but she had to. She looked up from her corner, scanning the room. There weren't many people in the crew for whom she felt any sort of attachment. Yet there were a couple that she would be sorry to see hurt should the obligators actually move against the crew. A few men who hadn't tried to abuse her, or, in very rare cases, who had actually shown her some measure of kindness. Yulaf was at the top of that list. He wasn't a friend, but he was the closest thing she had now that Rhin was gone. If he would go with her, then at least she wouldn't be alone. Cautiously, Vin stood and moved along the side of the room to where Yulaf sat drinking with some of the other younger crew members. She tugged on Yulaf's sleeve. He turned toward her.
Vin?
Yulaf, we need to go.
Go? Go where?
Away. Out of here.
Now?
Vin nodded urgently.
Wait, you want to go somewhere just you and I?
Not like that. Just, I need to leave the lair and I don't want to be alone.
Yulaf frowned. He leaned closer, a slight stink of ale on his breath.
What's this about, Vin?
I think something might happen, Yulaf. Something with the obligators. I just don't want to be in the lair right now.
Yulaf sat quietly for a moment.
All right. How long will this take?
I don't know. until evening at least, but we have to go. Now.
He nodded slowly.
Wait here for a moment.
Vin turned. She shot a glance at Kamen. He seemed to be busy laughing at his own jokes again. Then she moved through the ash-stained, smoky chamber into the lair's back room. The crew's general sleeping quarters consisted of a simple, elongated corridor lined with bedrolls. It was crowded and uncomfortable, but it was far better than the cold alleyways she'd slept in during her years traveling with Rean.
Alleyways that I might have to get used to again. I've survived them before. I can do it again.
She moved to her pallet. Vin knelt down, regarding her few possessions. If something did happen to the crew, she wouldn't be able to come back to the lair, ever. But she couldn't take the bedroll with her now. It was far too obvious. That left only the small box that contained her personal effects. A pebble from each city she'd visited, the earring Rean said Vin's mother had given her, and a bit of obsidian the size of a large coin. It was chipped to an irregular pattern. Rean had carried it as some kind of good luck charm. It was the only thing he'd left behind when he'd snuck away from the crew half a year before, abandoning her.
Just like he always said he would. I never thought he'd actually go. And that's exactly why he had to leave.
She gripped the bit of obsidian in her hand and pocketed the pebbles. The earring she put in her ear. It was a very simple thing. Little more than a stud, not even worth stealing, which was why she didn't fear leaving it in the back room. Still, Vin had rarely worn it, for fear that the ornamentation would make her look more feminine. She had no money, but Rean had taught her how to scavenge and beg. Both were difficult in the Final Empire, especially in Luthadel, but she would find a way if she had to. Vin left her box and bedroll, slipping back out into the common room. Maybe she was overreacting. Perhaps nothing would happen to the crew, but if it did, well, if there was one thing Rean had taught her, it was how to protect her neck. Bringing Yulaf was a good idea. He had contacts in Luthadel. If something happened to Kamen's crew, Yulaf could probably get them both jobs on... Vin froze just inside the main room. Yulaf wasn't at the table where she had left him. Instead, he stood furtively near the front of the room, near the bar, near Kamen.
What is this?
Kamen stood, his face red as sunlight. He pushed his stool out of the way, then lurched toward her, half drunk.
Running away? Off to betray me to the Ministry, are you?
Vin dashed toward the stairwell door, desperately scrambling around tables and past crew members. Kamen's hurled wooden stool hit her square in the back, throwing her to the ground. Pain flared between her shoulders. Vin lay in a daze. Then... something within her, something she knew of but didn't understand, gave her strength. Her head stopped swimming. Her pain became a focus. She climbed awkwardly to her feet. Kamen was there. He backhanded her even as she stood. Her head snapped to the side from the blow, twisting her neck so painfully that she barely felt herself hit the floor again. Kamen bent over her, grabbing her by the front of her shirt and pulling her up, raising his fist. Vin didn't pause to think or to speak. There was only one thing to do. She used up all of her luck in a single furious effort, pushing against Kamen, calming his fury. Kamen teetered. For a moment, his eyes softened. He lowered her slightly. Then the anger returned to his eyes.
You damn wench.
Kamen grabbed her by the shoulders and shook her.
That backstabbing brother of yours never respected me, and you're the same! I was too easy on both of you!
Vin tried to twist free, but Kamen's grip was firm. She searched desperately for aid from the other crew members. However, she knew what she would find. Indifference. They turned away, their faces embarrassed, but not concerned. Yulaf still stood near Kamen's table, looking down guiltily.
Fool. Ruthlessness. It's the most logical of emotions. You don't have any friends in the underworld. You'll never have any friends in the underworld.
She renewed her struggles. But Kamen hit her again, knocking her to the ground.
Just endure. He won't kill me. He needs me.
Yet as she turned weakly, she saw Kamen looming above her in the caliginous room, drunken fury showing in his face. She knew this time would be different. It would be no simple beating. He thought that she intended to betray him to the Ministry. He wasn't in control. There was murder in his eyes.
Please.
Vin reached for her luck, trying to make it work. There was no response. Luck, such as it was, had failed her. Kamen bent down and grabbed her by the shoulder. He raised an arm, his meaty hand forming another fist, his muscles tensing, an angry bead of sweat slipping off his chin and hitting her on the cheek. Kamen paused, arm upraised as he glared toward the door, and whatever unfortunate crew member had chosen just such an inopportune moment to return to the lair. Vin seized the distraction. Ignoring the newcomer, she tried to shake herself free from Kamen's grip, but she was too weak. Her face blazed from where he'd hit her, and she tasted blood on her lip. Her shoulder had been twisted awkwardly, and her side ached from where she'd fallen. She clawed at Kamen's hand, but she suddenly felt weak, her inner strength failing her, just as her luck had. Her pain suddenly seemed greater, more daunting, more demanding. She turned toward the door desperately. She was close, painfully close. She had nearly escaped, just a little farther. Then she saw the man standing quietly in the stairwell doorway. He was unfamiliar to her. Tall and hawk-faced, he had light blonde hair and wore a relaxed nobleman's suit, his cloak hanging free. He was perhaps in his mid-30s. He wore no hat, nor did he carry a dueling cane. And he looked very, very angry.
What is this? Who are you?
How did he get by the scouts? The obligators. Did they send him?
The newcomer looked down at Vin, and his expression softened slightly. Then he looked up at Kamen, and his eyes grew dark. Kamen was thrown backward as if he'd been punched by a powerful force.
Have to get away.
Vin forced herself up to her knees. Vin crawled away from Kamen, slipping beneath an unoccupied table. The lair had a hidden exit, a trapdoor beside the far back wall. If she could crawl to it... Suddenly, Vin felt an overwhelming peace. The emotion slammed into her like a sudden weight. Her emotions squished silent as if crushed by a forceful hand. Her fear puffed out like an extinguished candle, and even her pain seemed unimportant. She slowed, wondering why she had been so worried. She stood up, pausing as she faced the trapdoor.
Kamen just tried to kill me, and someone else is attacking the lair. I have to get away.
However, her emotions didn't match the logic. She felt serene, unworried, and more than a little bit curious. Someone had just used luck on her. She recognized it somehow, even though she'd never felt it upon her before. She paused beside the table, one hand on the wood, then slowly turned around. The newcomer still stood in the stairwell doorway. He studied her with a critical eye, then smiled in a disarming sort of way.
What is going on?
The newcomer finally stepped into the room. The rest of Kamen's crew remained sitting at their tables. They looked surprised, but oddly unworried.
He's using luck on them all, but how can he do it to so many at once?
Vin had never been able to store up enough luck to do more than give the occasional brief push. As the newcomer entered the room, Vin could finally see that a second person stood in the stairwell behind him. This second man was less imposing. He was shorter, with a dark half-beard and close-cropped straight hair. He also wore a nobleman's suit, though his was less sharply tailored. On the other side of the room, Kamen sat up, holding his head. He glanced at the newcomers.
A master dachshund! Why? Well, isn't this a surprise?
Indeed.
Vin frowned, realizing she sensed a slight familiarity to these men. She recognized them from somewhere.
The Canton of Finance. They were sitting in the waiting room when Kamen and I left.
Kamen climbed to his feet, studying the blonde newcomer. Kamen looked down at the man's hands, both of which were lined with strange overlapping scars.
By the Lord Ruler, the survivor of Hathsin.
Vin frowned. The title was unfamiliar to her. Should she know this man? Her wounds still throbbed, despite the peace she felt, and her head was dizzy. She leaned on the table for support, but did not sit. Whoever this newcomer was, Kamen obviously thought him important.
Why, Master Kelsier! This is a rare honor!
The newcomer, Kelsier, shook his head.
You know, I'm not really interested in listening to you.
Kamen was thrown backward again. Kelsier made no obvious gesture to perform the feat, yet Kamen collapsed to the ground. Kelsier scanned the room.
The rest of you know who I am?
Many of the crew members nodded.
Good. I've come to your lair because you, my friends, owe me a great debt.
We do, Master Kelsier?
Indeed you do. You see, Master Doxson and I just saved your lives. Your rather incompetent crew leader left the Ministry's Canton of Finance about an hour ago, returning directly to this safe house. He was followed by two Ministry scouts, one high-ranking Prelin, and a single Steel Inquisitor.
Oh, Lord.
Vin had been right. She just hadn't been fast enough. If there was an Inquisitor...
I dealt with the Inquisitor.
Kelsier paused, letting the implication hang in the air. What kind of person could so lightly claim to have dealt with an Inquisitor? Rumors said the creatures were immortal, that they could see a man's soul, and that they were unmatched warriors.
I require payment for services rendered.
Kamen didn't get up this time. He had fallen hard, and he was obviously disoriented. The room remained still. Finally, Milev, the dark-skinned man who was Kamen's second, scooped up the coffer of Ministry boxings and dashed forward with it. He proffered it to Kelsier.
The money Kamen got from the Ministry. 3,000 boxings.
Milev is so eager to please him. This is more than just luck. Either that, or it's some sort of luck I've never been able to use.
Kelsier paused, then accepted the coin chest.
And you are?
Milev, Master Kelsier.
Well, crew leader Milev, I will consider this payment satisfactory, assuming you do one other thing for me.
What would that be?
Kelsier nodded toward the near-unconscious Kamen.
Deal with him.
Of course.
I want him to live, Milev, but I don't want him to enjoy it.
We'll make him a beggar. The Lord Ruler disapproves of the profession. Kamen won't have an easy time of it here in Luthadel.
And Milev will dispose of him anyway as soon as he thinks this Kelsier isn't paying attention.
Good.
Kelsier opened the coin chest and began counting out some golden boxings.
You're a resourceful man, Milev. Quick on your feet, and not as easily intimidated as the others.
I've had dealings with Mistings before, Master Kelsier.
Dox, where were we going to have our meeting tonight?
I was thinking that we should use Clubs' shop.
Hardly a neutral location, especially if he decides not to join us.
True.
Kelsier looked to Milev.
I'm planning a job in this area. It would be useful to have the support of some locals.
Kelsier held out a pile of what looked like 100 boxings.
We'll require use of your safe house for the evening. This can be arranged?
Of course.
Milev took the coins eagerly.
Good. Now get out.
Out?
Yes. Take your men, including your former leader, and leave. I want to have a private conversation with Mistress Finn.
Well, you heard him.
Milev waved for a group of thugs to go grab Kamen, then he shooed the rest of the crew members up the stairs. Finn watched them go, growing apprehensive. This Kelsier was a powerful man, and instinct told her that powerful men were dangerous. Did he know of her luck? Obviously. What other reason would he have for singling her out?
How is this Kelsier going to try and use me?
By the way, Milev, when I say private, I mean that I don't want to be spied on by the four men watching us through the peek holes behind the far wall. Kindly take them up into the alley with you.
Of course, Master Kelsier.
Good. And in the alleyway, you'll find two dead Ministry spies. Kindly dispose of the corpses for us.
Milev nodded, turning.
And Milev?
Milev turned back again.
See that none of your men betray us.
Vin felt it again, a renewed pressure on her emotions.
This crew already has the eye of the Steel Ministry. Do not make an enemy of me as well.
Milev nodded sharply, then disappeared into the stairwell, pulling the door closed behind him. A few moments later, Vin heard footsteps from the peak room. Then all was still. She was alone with a man who was, for some reason, so singularly impressive that he could intimidate an entire roomful of cutthroats and thieves. She eyed the bolt door. Kelsier was watching her. What would he do if she ran?
He claims to have killed an Inquisitor. And he used luck. I have to stay, if just long enough to find out what he knows.
Oh, that was far too much fun, Dox.
The other man, the one Kamen had called Doxson, walked toward the front of the room. Vin tensed, but he didn't move toward her, instead strolling to the bar.
You were insufferable before, Kel. I don't know how I'm going to handle this new reputation of yours. At least, I'm not sure how I'm going to handle it and maintain a straight face.
You're jealous.
Yes, that's it. I'm terribly jealous of your ability to intimidate petty criminals. If it's of any note to you, I think you were too harsh on Kamen.
Kelsier walked over and took a seat at one of the room's tables.
You saw what he was doing to the girl.
Actually, I didn't. Someone was blocking the doorway.
Doxson rummaged through the bar's stores.
Look at her, Dox. The poor thing's been beaten nearly senseless. I don't feel any sympathy for the man.
Vin remained where she was, keeping watch on both men. As the tension of the moment grew weaker, her wounds began to throb again. The blow between her shoulder blades, that would be a large bruise, and the slap to her face burned as well. She was still a little dizzy. Kelsier was watching her. Vin clenched her teeth. Pain. She could deal with pain.
You need anything, child? What handkerchief for that face, perhaps?
She didn't respond, instead remaining focused on Kelsier.
Come on. Tell me what you want with me. Make your play.
Doxson finally shrugged, then ducked beneath the bar for a moment. He eventually came up with a couple of bottles.
Anything good?
What do you think? Even among thieves, Cammon isn't exactly known for his refinement. I have socks worth more than this wine.
Give me a cup anyway.
Kelsier glanced back at Vin.
You want anything? Don't worry. We're far less frightening than your friends think.
I don't think they were her friends, Cal.
Good point. Regardless, child, you don't have anything to fear from us. Other than Doc's breath.
Or Kel's jokes.
Vin stood quietly. She could act weak, the way she had with Cammon, but instincts told her that these men wouldn't respond well to that tactic. So she remained where she was, assessing the situation. The calmness fell upon her again. It encouraged her to be at ease, to be trusting, to simply do as the men were suggesting.
No!
She stayed where she was. Kelsier raised an eyebrow.
That's unexpected.
What?
Doxson poured a cup of wine.
Nothing.
You want a drink or not, lass?
Vin said nothing. All her life, as long as she could remember, she'd had her luck. It made her strong, and it gave her an edge over other thieves. It was probably why she was still alive. Yet all that time, she'd never really known what it was or why she could use it. Logic and instinct now told her the same thing, that she needed to find out what this man knew. However he intended to use her, whatever his plans, she needed to endure them. She had to find out how he'd grown so powerful.
Ale.
Ale? That's it?
I like it.
We'll have to work on that. Anyway, have a seat.
Hesitant, Vin walked over and sat down opposite Kelsier at the small table. Her wounds throbbed, but she couldn't afford to show weakness. Weakness killed. She had to pretend to ignore the pain. At least, sitting as she was, her head cleared. Doxson joined them a moment later, giving Kelsier a glass of wine and Vin her mug of ale. She didn't take a drink.
Who are you?
You're a blood one, eh? So much for my intriguing air of mystery.
Oh.
My name is Kelsier. I'm what you might call a crew leader, but I run a crew that isn't like any you've probably known. Men like Cammon, along with his crew, like to think of themselves as predators, feeding off the nobility and the various organizations of the ministry.
Not predators. Scavengers.
One would have thought, perhaps, that so close to the Lord Ruler, such things as thieving crews would not be able to exist. Yet Reen had shown her that the opposite was true. Powerful, rich nobility congregated around the Lord Ruler. And where power and riches existed, so did corruption, especially since the Lord Ruler tended to police his nobility far less than he did the Ska. It had to, apparently, with his fondness for their ancestors. Either way, thieving crews like Cammon's were the rats who fed on the city's corruption, and like rats, they were impossible to entirely exterminate, especially in a city with the population of Luthadel.
Scavengers. That's an appropriate description, Vin. Well, Dox and I were scavengers too. We're just a higher quality of scavenger. We're more well-bred, you might say, or perhaps just more ambitious.
You're noblemen?
Lord, no.
Or at least, not full-blooded ones.
Half-breeds aren't supposed to exist. The ministry hunts them.
Half-breeds like you?
How?
Even the steel ministry isn't infallible, Vin. If they can miss you, then they can miss others.
Milev, he called you Mistings. Those are some kind of allomancer, right?
She's observant.
Indeed. The man did call us Mistings, Vin, though the appellation was a bit hasty, since neither Dox nor I are technically Mistings. We do, however, associate with them quite a bit.
Vin sat quietly for a moment, sitting beneath the scrutiny of the two men. Allomancy. the mystical power held by the nobility granted to them by the Lord Ruler some 1,000 years before as a reward for their loyalty. It was basic ministry doctrine. Even a Ska like Vin knew that much. The nobility had allomancy and privilege because of their ancestors. The Ska were punished for the same reason. The truth was, however, that she didn't really know what allomancy was. It had something to do with fighting, she'd always assumed. One misting, as they were called, was said to be dangerous enough to kill an entire thieving team. Yet the Ska she knew spoke of the power in whispered, uncertain tones. Before this moment, she'd never even paused to consider the possibility that it might simply be the same thing as her luck.
Tell me, Vin, do you realize what you did to that obligator in the Canton of Finance?
I used my luck. I use it to make people less angry.
Or less suspicious. Easier to scam.
Vin nodded.
There are a lot of things you're going to have to learn. Techniques, rules, and exercises. One lesson, however, cannot wait. Never use emotional allomancy on an obligator. They're all trained to recognize when their passions are being manipulated. Even the high nobility are forbidden from pulling or pushing the emotions of an obligator. You are what caused that obligator to send for an inquisitor.
Pray the creature never catches your trail again, lass.
You didn't kill the Inquisitor?
I just distracted him for a bit, which was quite dangerous enough, I might add. Don't worry. Many of the rumors about them aren't true. Now that he's lost your trail, he won't be able to find you again.
Most likely.
Most likely. There are a lot of things we don't know about the Inquisitors. They don't seem to follow the normal rules. Those spikes through their eyes, for instance, should kill them. Nothing I've learned about allomancy has ever provided an explanation for how those creatures keep living. If it were only a regular misting seeker on your trail, we wouldn't need to worry. An inquisitor? Well, you'll want to keep your eyes open. Of course, you already seem pretty good at that.
Vin sat uncomfortably for a moment. Eventually, Kelsier nodded to her mug of ale.
You aren't drinking.
You might have slipped something in it.
Oh, there was no need for me to sneak something into your drink.
Kelsier pulled an object out of his suit coat pocket.
After all, you're going to drink this vial of mysterious liquid quite willingly.
He set a small glass vial on the tabletop. Vin frowned, regarding the liquid within. There was a dark residue at its bottom.
What is it?
If I told you, it wouldn't be mysterious.
The vial is filled with an alcohol solution and some flakes of metal, Vin.
Metal?
2 of the 8 basic allomantic metals. We need to do some tests.
Vin eyed the vial.
You'll have to drink it if you want to know more about this luck of yours.
You drink half first.
A bit on the paranoid side, I see.
Kelsier picked up the vial and pulled off the plug.
Shake it up first, so you get some of the sediment.
Kelsier rolled his eyes, but did as requested, shaking the vial, then downing half of its contents. He set it back on the table. Vin frowned, then she eyed Kelsier, who smiled. He knew that he had her. He had shown off his power, had tempted her with it.
The only reason to be subservient to those with power is so that you can learn to someday take what they have.
Vin reached out and took the vial, then she downed its contents. She sat, waiting for some magical transformation or surge of power, or even signs of poison. She felt nothing.
How anticlimactic.
She frowned, leaning back in her chair. Out of curiosity, she felt at her luck and felt her eyes widen in shock. It was there, like a massive golden hoard, a storage of power so incredible that it stretched her understanding. Always before, she had needed to be a scrimp with her luck, holding it in reserve, using up morsels sparingly. Now she felt like a starving woman invited to a high nobleman's feast. She sat, stunned, regarding the enormous wealth within her.
So, try it. Soothe me.
Vin reached out, tentatively touching her newfound mass of luck. She took a bit and directed it at Kelsier.
Good. But we already knew you could do that. Now the real test, Vin. Can you go the other way? You can dampen my emotions, but can you inflame them too?
Vin frowned. She'd never used her luck in such a way. She hadn't even realized that she could. Why was he so eager? Suspicious, Vin reached for her source of luck. As she did so, she noticed something interesting. What she had first interpreted as one massive source of power was actually 2 different sources of power. There were different types of luck.
8. He'd said there were 8 of them. But what do the others do?
Kelsier was still waiting. Vin reached to the second unfamiliar source of luck, doing as she'd done before and directing it at him. Kelsier's smile deepened and he sat back, glancing at Doxson.
That's it then. She did it?
To be honest, Kel, I'm not sure what to think. Having one of you around was unsettling enough. Two, though,
Two what?
Even among the nobility, Vin, allomancy is modestly rare. True, it's a hereditary skill, with most of its powerful lines among the high nobility. However, breeding alone doesn't guarantee allomantic strength. Many high noblemen only have access to a single allomantic skill. People like that, those who can only perform allomancy in one of its eight basic aspects, are called mistings. Sometimes these abilities appear in Ska, but only if that Ska has noble blood in his or her near ancestry. You can usually find one misting in, about 10,000 mixed breed Ska. The better and closer the noble ancestry, the more likely the Ska is to be a misting.
Who were your parents, Vin? Do you remember them?
I was raised by my half-brother, Reen.
Did he speak of your mother and father?
Occasionally. Reen said that our mother was a whore. Not out of choice, but the underworld.
Her mother had tried to kill her once, when she was very young. She vaguely remembered the event. Reen had saved her.
What about your father, then?
Vin looked up.
He is a high prelin in the steel ministry.
Now that's a slightly ironic breach of duty.
Vin looked down at the table. Finally, she reached over and took a healthy pull on her mug of ale.
Most ranking obligators in the ministry are high noblemen. Your father gave you a rare gift in that blood of yours.
So, I'm one of these mistings you mentioned?
Actually, no. You see, this is what made you so interesting to us, Vin. Mistings only have access to one allomantic skill. You just proved you have two. And if you have access to at least two of the eight, then you have access to the rest as well. That's the way it works. If you're an allomancer, you either get one skill or you get them all. You, Vin, are what is generally called a mistborn. Even amongst the nobility, they're incredibly rare. Amongst Ska, well, let's just say I've only met one other Ska mistborn in my entire life.
Somehow the room seemed to grow more quiet, more still. Vin stared at her mug with distracted, uncomfortable eyes.
So, what does this all mean?
It means that you, Vin, are a very special person. You have a power that most high noblemen envy. It is a power that, had you been born an aristocrat, would have made you one of the most deadly and influential people in all of the final empire. But you weren't born an aristocrat. You're not noble, Vin. You don't have to play by their rules, and that makes you even more powerful.
Will take us up into the highlands of Terrace. This is said to be a cold, unforgiving place. A land where the mountains themselves are made of ice. Our normal attendance will not do for such a trip. We should probably hire some Terrace packmen to carry our gear.
You heard what he said. He's planning a job. I wonder which of the great houses he's going to strike.
It'll be one of the most powerful ones.
Vin saw it was Distin, one of Kamen's head point men, who spoke. He was missing a hand, but his eyes and ears were among the keenest in the crew.
Kelsier never bothers himself with small-time jobs.
She sat quietly, her mug of ale, the same one Kelsier had given her, still sitting mostly full on the tabletop. Her table was crowded with people. Kelsier had let the thieves return to their home for a bit before his meeting began. Vin, however, would have preferred to remain by herself. Life with Reen had accustomed her to loneliness. If you let someone get too close, it would just give them better opportunities to betray you. Even after Reen's disappearance, Vin had kept to herself. She hadn't been willing to leave. However, she also hadn't felt the need to become familiar with the other crew members. They had, in turn, been perfectly willing to let her alone. Vin's position had been precarious, and associating with her could have tainted them by association. Only Yulaf had made any moves to befriend her.
If you let someone get close to you, it will only hurt more when they betray you.
Had Yulaf even really been her friend? He'd certainly sold her out quickly enough. In addition, the crew members had taken Vin's beating and sudden rescue in stride, never mentioning their betrayal or refusal to help her. They'd only done what was expected.
The survivor hasn't bothered himself with any jobs lately.
Vin noted that Harmon, an older, scraggly-bearded burglar, spoke next.
He's barely been seen at the Luthadel a handful of times during the last few years. In fact, he hasn't pulled any jobs since...
This is the first one? The first since he escaped the pits? Oh, then it's bound to be something spectacular.
Did he say anything about it, Vin? Vin?
Distin waved a stumpy arm in her direction, catching her attention.
What?
She looked up. Vin had cleaned herself up slightly since her beating at Kamen's hand, finally accepting a handkerchief from Doxum to wipe the blood from her face. There was little she could do about the bruises, however. Those still throbbed. Hopefully nothing was broken.
Kelsier, did he say anything about the job he's planning?
Vin shook her head. She glanced down at the bloodied handkerchief. Kelsier and Doxum had left a short time ago, promising to return after she'd had some time to think about the things they had told her. There was an implication in their words, however, an offer. Whatever job they were planning, she was invited to participate.
Why'd he pick you to be his twixt anyway, Vin? Did he say anything about that?
That's what the crew assumed, that Kelsier had chosen her to be his contact with Kamen's... Milev's crew. There were two sides to the Luthadel Underground. There were the regular crews, like Kamen's. Then there were the special ones. Groups composed of the extremely skillful, the extremely foolhardy, or the extremely talented allomancers. The two sides of the underworld didn't mix. Regular thieves left their betters alone. However, occasionally one of these misting crews hired a regular team to do some of its more mundane work, and they would choose a twixt, a go-between, to work with both crews. Hence Yulif's assumption about Vin. Milev's crew members noticed her unresponsiveness and turned to another topic, mistings. They spoke of allomancy with uncertain, whispered tones, and she listened, uncomfortable. How could she be associated with something they held in such awe? Her luck, her allomancy, was something small, something she used to survive, but something really quite unimportant.
Such power.
She looked in at her luck reserve.
What's Kelsier been doing these last few years, I wonder?
Yulif had seemed a bit uncomfortable around her at the beginning of the conversation, but that had passed quickly. He'd betrayed her, but this was the underworld. No friends.
It didn't seem that way between Kelsier and Doxum. They appeared to trust each other.
A front? Or were they simply one of those rare teams that actually didn't worry about each other's betrayal? The most unsettling thing about Kelsier and Doxum had been their openness with her. They seemed willing to trust, even accept, Vin after a relatively short time. It couldn't be genuine. No one could survive in the underworld following such tactics. Still, their friendliness was disconcerting.
2 years.
Prude, a flat-faced, quiet thug, was the next to speak up.
He must have spent the entire time planning for this job.
It must be some job indeed.
Tell me about him.
Kelsier?
Vin nodded.
They didn't talk about Kelsier down south?
Vin shook her head.
He was the best crew leader in Luthadel. A legend. Even among the Mistings. He robbed some of the wealthiest great houses in the city.
And?
Someone betrayed him.
Of course.
The Lord Ruler himself caught Kelsier. Sent Kelsier and his wife to the pits of Half-Sin. But he escaped. He escaped from the pits, Vin. He's the only one who ever has.
And the wife?
She didn't make it.
So, he's lost someone too. How can he laugh so much? So honestly?
That's where he got those scars, you know? The ones on his arms? He got them at the pits, from the rocks on a sheer wall where he had to climb to escape.
Huh. That's not how he got them. He killed an Inquisitor while escaping. That's where he got the scars.
I heard he got them fighting one of the monsters that guard the pits. He reached into its mouth and strangled it from the inside. The teeth scraped his arms.
How do you strangle someone from inside?
That's just what I heard.
The man isn't natural. Something happened to him in the pits. Something bad. He wasn't an allomancer before then, you know. He entered the pits a regular ska, and now... Well, he's a misting for sure. If he's even human anymore. Been out in the mists a lot, that one has. Some say the real Kelsier is dead. And that the thing wearing his face is...
something else.
No, that's just Plantation Scar foolishness. We've all gone out in the mists.
Not in the mists outside the city. The mist wraiths are out there. I'll grab a man and take his face, sure as the Lord Ruler.
Harmon rolled his eyes.
Harud's right about one thing. That man isn't human. He might not be a mist wraith, but he's not Sky either. I've heard of him doing things. Things like only they can do. The ones that come out at night.
Mistborn.
Mistborn.
Vin had heard the term before Kelsier had mentioned it to her, of course. Who hadn't? Yet the rumors about Mistborn made stories of Inquisitors and Mistings seem rational. It was said that Mistborn were heralds of the mists themselves, endowed with great powers by the Lord Ruler. Only high noblemen could be Mistborn. They were said to be a secret sect of assassins who served him, only going out at night. Rhen had always taught her that they were a myth, and Vin had assumed he was right.
And Kelsier says I, like he himself, am one of them.
How could she be what he said? Child of a prostitute, she was nobody. She was nothing.
Never trust a man who tells you good news. It's the oldest but easiest way to con someone.
Yet she did have her luck, her allomancy. She could still sense the reserves Kelsier's vial had given her, and had tested her powers on the crew members. No longer limited to just a bit of luck a day, she found she could produce far more striking effects. Vin was coming to realize that her old goal in life, simply staying alive, was uninspired. There was so much more she could be doing. She had been a slave to Rhen. She had been a slave to Kamen. She would be a slave to this Kelsier, too, if it would lead her to eventual freedom. At his table, Milev looked at his pocket watch, then stood.
All right, everyone out.
The room began to clear in preparation for Kelsier's meeting. Vin remained where she was. Kelsier had made it quite clear to the others that she was invited. She sat quietly for a bit, the room feeling far more comfortable to her now that it was empty. Kelsier's friends began to arrive a short time later. The first man down the steps had the build of a soldier. He wore a loose, sleeveless shirt that exposed a pair of well-sculpted arms. He was impressively muscular, but not massive, and had close-cropped hair that stuck up slightly on his head. The soldier's companion was a sharply dressed man in a nobleman's suit, plum vest, gold buttons, black overcoat, complete with short-brimmed hat and dueling cane. He was older than the soldier, and was a bit portly. He removed his hat upon entering the room, revealing a head of well-styled black hair.
Ah, this must be our Twixt. Has Kelsier arrived yet, my dear?
Suddenly, despite herself, Vin found herself liking this well-dressed, articulate man.
No.
Though overalls and a work shirt had always suited her, she suddenly wished that she owned something nicer. This man's very bearing seemed to demand a more formal atmosphere.
Should have known that Kel would be late to his own meeting.
He sat down at one of the tables near the center of the room.
Indeed. I suppose his tardiness leaves us with a chance for some refreshment. I could so use something to drink.
Let me get you something.
Vin jumped to her feet.
How gracious of you.
The suited man chose a chair next to the soldier.
Oh.
He sat with one leg crossed over the other, his dueling cane held to the side, tip against the floor, one hand resting on the top. Vin walked to the bar and began rummaging for drinks.
Breeze.
Vin selected a bottle of Kamen's most expensive wine and began pouring a cup.
Huh?
The soldier nodded toward Vin.
Oh, very well.
Vin paused, wine half poured, and frowned slightly.
What am I doing?
I swear, Ham, you are dreadfully stiff sometimes.
Just because you can push someone around doesn't mean you should, Breeze.
Vin stood dumbfounded.
He used luck on me.
When Kelsier had tried to manipulate her, she'd felt his touch and had been able to resist. This time, however, she hadn't even realized what she was doing. She looked up at the man, thinning her eyes.
Mistborn.
Hardly. Kelsier is the only Ska Mistborn you're likely to ever meet, my dear. And pray you never are in a situation where you meet a noble one. No, I am just an ordinary, humble Misting.
Humble?
Breeze shrugged.
You pulled on my emotions. With allomancy, I mean.
I pushed on them, actually. Pulling makes a person less trusting and more determined. Pushing on emotions, soothing them, makes a person more trusting.
Regardless, you controlled me. You made me fetch you a drink.
Oh, I wouldn't say that I made you do it. I just altered your emotions slightly, putting you in a frame of mind where you'd be more likely to do as I wished.
I don't know, Breeze. It's an interesting question. By influencing her emotions, did you take away her ability to choose? If, for instance, she were to kill or steal while under your control, would the crime be hers or yours?
There's really no question to it at all. You shouldn't think about such things, Hammond. You'll hurt your brain. I offered her encouragement. I simply did it through an irregular means. But I'm not going to argue it with you, Ham.
Breeze looked at Vin.
Are you going to bring me the drink? You're already up, and you're going to have to come back this direction to reach your seat anyway.
Vin examined her emotions. Did she feel irregularly drawn to do as the man asked? Was he manipulating her again? Finally, she simply walked away from the bar, leaving the drink where it was. Breeze didn't stand to go get the drink himself, however. Vin walked tentatively toward the two men's table. She was accustomed to shadows and corners, close enough to eavesdrop, but far enough away to escape. Yet she couldn't hide from these men, not while the room was so empty. So, she chose a chair at the table beside the one that the two men were using, then sat cautiously. She needed information. As long as she was ignorant, she was going to be at a severe disadvantage in this new world of misting crews.
Nervous little thing, aren't you?
You.
Vin nodded to Ham.
You're a misting too?
I'm a thug.
Vin frowned in confusion.
I burn pewter.
Again, Vin looked at him questioningly.
He hits things, particularly other people, who try to interfere with what the rest of us are doing.
There's much more to it than that. I run general security for jobs, providing my crew leader with manpower and warriors, assuming such are necessary.
And he'll try and bore you with random philosophy when it isn't.
Breeze, honestly, sometimes I don't know why I...
The newcomer wore a dull tan overcoat, a pair of brown trousers, and a simple white shirt. However, his face was far more distinctive than his clothing. It was knotted and gnarled like a twisted piece of wood, and his eyes shone with the level of disapproving dissatisfaction only the elderly can display. Vin couldn't quite place his age. He was young enough that he wasn't stooped over, yet he was old enough that he made even the middle-aged Breeze look youthful. The newcomer looked over Vin and the others, then walked to a table on the other side of the room and sat down. His steps were marked by a distinct limp.
Oh, I'm going to miss Trap.
We all will. Clubs is very good, though. I've worked with him before.
I wonder if I could get him to bring my drink over.
I'd pay money to see you try it.
I'm sure you would.
Vin eyed the newcomer, who seemed perfectly content to ignore her and the other two men.
What's he?
Clubs? He, my dear, is a smoker. He is what will keep the rest of us from being discovered by an inquisitor.
Vin chewed on her lip, digesting the new information as she studied Clubs. The man shot her a glare and she looked away. As she turned, she noticed that Ham was looking at her.
I like you, kid. The other twixts I've worked with have either been too intimidated to talk to us, or they've been jealous of us from moving into their territory.
Indeed, you're not like most Crumbs. Of course, I'd like you a great deal more if you'd go fetch me that glass of wine.
Crumb?
That's what some of the more self-important members of our society call lesser thieves. They call you Crumbs since you tend to be involved with less inspired projects.
No offense intended, of course.
Oh, I would never take offense at...
Vin felt an irregular desire to please the well-dressed man.
Stop that!
See, there. She still retains her ability to choose.
You're hopeless.
They assume I'm a twixt. So Kelsier hasn't told them what I am. Why?
Time constraints? Or was the secret too valuable to share? How trustworthy were these men? And if they thought her a simple crumb, why were they being so nice to her?
Who else are we waiting upon? Besides Kel and Dox, I mean.
Eden.
Ah, yes.
I agree. But I'd be willing to bet that he feels the same way about us.
I don't even see why he was invited.
Something to do with Kel's plan, obviously.
The infamous plan. What job could it be? What indeed?
Kel and his cursed sense of drama.
Indeed.
A few moments later, the one they had spoken of, Eden, entered. He turned out to be an unassuming man, and Vin had trouble understanding why the other two were so displeased about his attendance. Short, with curly brown hair, Eden was dressed in simple gray ska clothing and a patched, soot-stained brown worker's coat. He regarded the surroundings with a look of disapproval, but he was nowhere near as openly hostile as Clubs, who still sat on the other side of the room scowling at anyone who looked in his direction.
Not a very big crew. With Kelsier and Doxson, that makes six of them.
Of course, Ham had said that he led a group of thugs. Were the men at this meeting simply representatives? The leaders of smaller, more specialized groups? Some crews work that way. Breeze checked his pocket watch three more times before Kelsier finally arrived. The Mistborn crew leader burst through the door with his cheery enthusiasm, Doxson sauntering along behind. Ham stood immediately, smiling broadly and clasping hands with Kelsier. Breeze stood as well, and while his greeting was a bit more reserved, Vin had to admit that she had never seen any crew leader welcomed so happily by his men.
Ah.
Kelsier looked toward the other side of the room.
Clubs and Yeadon, too. So, everyone's here. Good. I absolutely loathe being made to wait.
Breeze raised an eyebrow as he and Ham settled back into their chairs, Doxson taking a seat at the same table.
Are we to receive any explanation for your tardiness?
Doxson and I were visiting my brother.
Kelsier walked toward the front of the lair. He turned and leaned back against the bar, scanning the room. When Kelsier's eyes fell on Vin, he winked.
Your brother? Is Marsh coming to the meeting?
Kelsier and Doxson shared a look.
Not tonight, but he'll join the crew eventually.
Vin studied the others. They were skeptical.
Tension between Kelsier and his brother, perhaps?
Breeze raised his dueling cane, pointing the tip at Kelsier.
All right, Kelsier, you've kept this job secret from us for 8 months now. We know it's big, we know you're excited, and we're all properly annoyed at you for being so secretive. So, why don't you just go ahead and tell us what it is?
Kelsier smiled. Then he stood up straight, waving a hand toward the dirty, plain-looking Eden.
Gentlemen, meet your new employer.
Him?
Him.
What? You have trouble working with someone who actually has morals?
It's not that, my dear man.
Breeze rested his dueling cane across his lap.
It's just that, well, I was under the strange impression that you didn't like our types very much.
I don't. You're selfish, undisciplined, and you've turned your backs on the rest of the ska. You dress nicely, but on the inside you're dirty as ash.
I can already see that this job is going to be great for crew morale.
Vin watched quietly, chewing on her lip. Eden was obviously a ska worker, probably a member of a forge or textile mill. What connection did he have with the underground? And how would he be able to afford the services of a thieving crew, especially one as apparently specialized as Kelsier's team? Perhaps Kelsier noticed her confusion, for she found him looking at her.
I'm still a little confused. Eden, we're all aware of how you regard thieves, so why hire us?
Because everyone knows how effective you are.
Disapproving of our morals doesn't make you unwilling to make use of our skills, I see. So, what is the job, then? What does the Ska Rebellion wish of us?
Ska Rebellion?
A piece of the conversation fell into place. There were two sides to the underworld. The far larger portion was made up of the thieves, crews, whores, and beggars who tried to survive outside of mainstream ska culture. And then there were the rebels, the people who worked against the Final Empire. Reen had always called them fools, a sentiment shared by most of the people, both underworlders and regular ska, that Vin had met. All eyes slowly turned to Kelsier, who leaned back against the bar again.
The Ska Rebellion, courtesy of its leader, Yeadon, has hired us for something very specific.
What? Robbery? Assassination?
A little of both, and at the same time, neither one. Gentlemen, this isn't going to be a regular job. It's going to be different from anything any crew has ever tried to pull. We're going to help Yeadon overthrow the Final Empire.
Excuse me?
You heard me right, Ham. That's the job I've been planning. The destruction of the Final Empire, or at least its center of government. Yeadon has hired us to supply him with an army, then provide him with a favorable opportunity to seize control of this city.
Ham sat back, then shared a glance with Breeze. Both men turned toward Doxson, who nodded solemnly.
I should never have agreed to this. Now that you say it, I realize how ridiculous it all sounds.
Trust me, Yeadon. These men have made a habit of pulling off plans that seem ridiculous at first glance.
That may be true, Kel, but in this case, I find myself agreeing with our disapproving friend. Overthrow the final empire. That is something that Ska rebels have been working toward for 1,000 years. What makes you think that we can achieve anything where those men have failed?
We'll succeed because we have vision, Breeze. That's something the Rebellion has always lacked.
Excuse me?
It's true, unfortunately. The Rebellion condemns people like us because of our greed, but for all their high morals, which, by the way, I respect, they never get anything done. Yeadon, your men hide in woods and in hills, plotting how they'll someday rise up and lead a glorious war against the final empire, but your kind has no idea how to develop and execute a proper plan.
And you have no idea what you're talking about.
Oh? Tell me, what has your rebellion accomplished during its 1,000-year struggle? Where are your successes and your victories? The massacre of Touje 3 centuries ago, where 7,000 Ska rebels were slaughtered? The occasional raid of a traveling canal boat or the kidnapping of a minor noble official?
That's the best we can manage with the people we have. Don't blame my men for their failures. Blame the rest of the Ska. We can't ever get them to help. They've been beaten down for a millennium. They haven't got any spirit left. It's difficult enough to get 1 in 1,000 to listen to us, let alone rebel.
Peace, Yeadon. I'm not trying to insult your courage. We're on the same side, remember? You came to me specifically because you were having trouble recruiting people for your army.
I'm regretting that decision more and more, thief.
Well, you've already paid us, so it's a little late to back out now. But we'll get you that army, Yeadon. The men in this room are the most capable, most clever, and most skilled allomancers in the city. You'll see.
Vin sat at her table, watching the interaction with a frown.
What is your game, Kelsier?
His words about overthrowing the final empire were obviously a front. It seemed most likely to her that he intended to scam the Ska Rebellion. But if he'd already been paid, then why continue the charade?